All right. Thank you so much for letting me come and speak here today. Sorry about my late arrival. So I'm really excited to be talking to you about the current research that's being conducted both at Emory University. We're also partnered with UANL in northern Mexico, as well as North Carolina State University. And we're all working together on this Clean Greens project, which I will be presenting today. So first of all, I'm just going to give you a little background to our study, some of the methods that we use, as well as some of our results, the recommendations we will be making, and what's coming next in the project. So first of all, as you all know, that produce-related foodborne outbreaks are currently a huge public health burden. There's been several produce-related outbreaks in the more recent years, and it is currently the second leading single-ingredient food causing outbreaks and illness in America. As you can see here on this graph, that produce is from 1990 to 2003, it was responsible for over 500 outbreaks in America, and this number is definitely increasing in the more recent years. And because of that, we have decided that there is a need to understand how and at what point in the production process produce is becoming contaminated. This is what led us to Clean Greens 1 and 2. And in that study, we aimed to characterize the contamination during the post-harvest production process. And to do this, we took samples at farms and packing sheds near the U.S.-Mexico border. We took samples from 14 different types of leafy greens and other produce, as well as some matched environmental samples, which meant produce sample, water samples, hand rinse samples, as well as swabs from equipment in the packing sheds. Our results showed that the concentrations of indicators on produce was associated with multiple risk factors, including the type of crop, what season it was being produced in, as well as what step in the processing it occurred. And then also that the concentration of indicators on produce increased from the field into the production shed. And this is what led us to Clean Greens 3. Because we saw that increase as it went through the production process, we wanted to hone in at the start when the produce was becoming contaminated at the beginning. And that is why we aim to identify the contamination routes at the farm level in northern Mexico. So there we partnered with 9 different farms in the U.S.-Mexico border region, but on the Mexico side. And these farms grew cantaloupe, tomatoes, and jalapenos, which were our sample produce that we were looking at. And at these farms, we collected data on the fecal indicators, which is basically just used to indicate if there was fecal contamination on this produce, both bacterial and viral, and at what number. And that showed the pathogens that would have been, we used that to identify which pathogens were present out of these, which ones were most at risk. We also did microbial source tracking, which is a method used to determine what sort of fecal material is that. Is it human-based? Is it animal-based? And then finally, we also conducted several farm surveys in which we checked on what sort of agricultural practices were already being conducted, as well as what kind of hygiene and sanitation worker practices were already in place. So our research aim was to first and foremost quantify and assess whether microbial levels on produce were associated with hands, soil, and or water. We also hope to assess whether microbial contamination levels on produce differed between type. That was between cantaloupe, tomatoes, and jalapenos. All right, so methods. So in order to do this, we took samples along a whole chain of points in the production process. First, at the field level, when the produce was growing, we took samples from the water, both at the point of source and at the point when it was coming out of the irrigation system, which was mostly, drip irrigation. We also took rinses from the produce when it was growing, as well as some soil samples. Then we took match samples at the next 3 points in process: at the field during harvest, truck as it was being placed on the truck, as well as if there was a packing shed present on the farm. We took match samples there of farm workers' hands rinses, as well as the produce that they were then picking, rinses from that produce. So our results showed first that the cantaloupe indicator concentrations were higher than any other produce that we sampled out of 113 different cantaloupes. These show here the log count of coliform units that we found, as well as the increasing prevalence. And as you can see, cantaloupe was significantly higher for E. coli, Enterococcus, and fecal coliform in comparison to any of the other produce. Secondly, we found that hands have a higher indicator concentration than soil, irrigation, or source water. Here we see the proportion of samples along the y-axis that have coliform units found present in this. And as you can see, the hand-rinsed samples in red were found at increasingly higher concentrations, whereas the other environmental samples were either below the limit of detection or were at the lowest concentration levels. We also found that the produce indicator concentrations and prevalence were significantly associated with hands. This meant when we took that matched sample, we could use that to find these correlations. And here, we did a Spearman's correlation to determine if they were significantly correlated, and we found that they were for fecal coliforms, E. coli, and Enterococcus. And we did the odds ratio to determine if they were present in a significant amount, and we found that for E. coli and hands. So in conclusion, just to make that all a little more clear, first of all, we found that cantaloupes, in comparison to jalapenos and tomatoes, have the highest concentration of indicators. Secondly, hands, in comparison to soil and irrigation water, have high concentrations and prevalence of indicators. And that finally, the concentration and prevalence of indicators on produce were significantly associated with indicators on hands, but not or soil and drip irrigation from the groundwater. So what are our recommendations because of this? Due to the fact that there are differences in contamination on produce item, when we are in the future going to work on our intervention process, we hope to be produce specific and address the specific risks on each produce as they are obviously quite different. Secondly, we hope to, due to the fact that the contamination was not at all associated with the water, which was generally from a chlorinated municipal source or from well water, and as well as from high quality drip irrigation, we will include the recommended use of high quality water source and delivery method. And then finally, due to the fact that the contamination was associated between produce and worker hands, our intervention will aim to improve worker hygiene and sanitation access. So what's coming next for our project? We will be designing an intervention, and this is going to be the majority of our work to come, in which we will hope to reduce the risk of contamination between hands and produce. We will do this through focus groups and trainings of farm managers of good agricultural practices, which is a term and a set of policies defined by the FDA, which is now, it was recommendations for all American produce, but is now being made into a set of requirements for all produce produced in America, as well as all produce that is being imported into America. And so we will use these guidelines to help train our farm managers into what are the best practices to be implemented on the field to reduce the contamination. We will also aim to improve the sanitation and hygiene facilities present on the field, working with these farm managers to make these facilities present and available for all of the workers on the field. And then we hope to evaluate the effectiveness of this study as time continues through monitoring of the contamination levels on that produce. I'd just like to say thank you so much to everyone on the Clean Greens team, both at NCSU, UANL, and Emory, as well as all the U.S. and Mexico farm and shed workers that have put in so much time and let us tromp through their fields every day. And from funding from the USDA and FDA as well. So thank you, and I guess we will do questions later.
Well, you have time for questions.
Yeah.
To yours.
Okay, does anyone have any questions? Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So her question was why cantaloupe may be at a higher risk than the other produce. Have we done any research for that? Our team hasn't, but we've read extensive literature as it has to do mostly with the fact that cantaloupe, first of all, grows on the ground specifically. Tomato and jalapenos, you know, grow on a bush or other produce maybe grows on a tree, but cantaloupe and other of that type grow straight on the ground. So fecal contamination is a lot easier to get on the cantaloupe, as well as due to the fact that they have that kind of porous cover that has the pathogens have a great adherence to all of those like holes and tunnels and everything. And the other thing is just our practices with cantaloupe. We think that due to the fact that they have this skin that we don't eat when we buy the cantaloupe, we don't need to wash the outside. And even though when we cut through, we can pull all those pathogens right into the fruit themselves, and then we put it in the refrigerator, and that pathogens just kind of fester on the produce themselves. Yeah, in the back. There are some recommendations, but there is no set defined policies that are required of farm workers. And that's why kind of we're using our study as an incentive, sort of, that they most of our farmers want to export into America. And in order to be able to export, they have to pass this auditing process that will use those good agricultural practices set as their checklist, sort of. And so even though there's not much in America, in order to be able to import into the United States, they have to be able to pass these set of now, not recommendations, now they're a set of defined policies, even though they're not present in Mexico. We think that maybe as we continue to work in that area, that maybe we can work with SEGARPA, which is the Mexican version of like our USDA, that maybe we can work to partner together and create a more defined set. Also in the back, sorry. I think that's definitely a good point. I don't know of any explicit cost analysis at this point, but I think in our aim for going back to the actual production process, we were hoping to be more cost effective in eliminating the chance of contamination to even happen at the start of production, and consequently having a lower level of contamination through the production process, and so consumers would have a lower need to be concerned about their produce safety in general. And it seems like it would be pretty cost effective to just eliminate it at the farm by providing hand washing stations and sanitation stations for these farm workers. However, I would still probably encourage the continued safety in your own homes of produce, obviously, until this improves. Yeah. Yes. Sorry, I should have made that more clear. Actually, it's farm workers' hands usually have the contamination on them due to the fact that there are very, very few. In our farm surveys, we found that there are almost no latrines or toilets present in these farms for these farm workers. So what we are often seeing is open defecation in the fields right next to the produce, and then no way to wash their hands as well. And so we actually have fecal contamination on these farm workers' hands that are then picking the fruit and getting that contamination on the produce themselves. And so that seems to be the pathway. We haven't seen like a causal, you know, we can't say it's like because of this, but it's they're correlated. Right, that also has a fecal contamination. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, in the gray, yeah. Yes, it's already in the process of being published in a few different, I can talk to you afterwards about that more and give you my contact information of my PI. She would know more of that, but yeah. And yes, one more in the back. Right. Because many of them are working in situations where they're not provided either with the materials to clean their hands, the time, there are financial incentives for them not to take the time to do it. So I think working at policy and grower levels could be really important. I like to hear a lot. no, definitely. Thank you so much for reiterating that. It's definitely not the farm workers' fault for not having access to this, and I think that's why we're hoping to partner with the farm managers in order to provide these facilities for their workers and improve their education of their farm workers as well. And that's why we're hoping to create these focus groups and everything with the managers themselves. Yes, thank you for saying that. I think that's all for now.
So please, just want to add a few.
We do have time for questions for all of our presenters today. Unfortunately, there's not a microphone in this room other than this one. So if you will try to speak loudly and direct your questions to the speakers that you would like to answer, and they can come to the microphone and answer your question. Are there questions for our presenters?
Of course, I have one. Let me find it again.
Dr. Frank, I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit about your training protocol for your student observers. I work with students in several types of observational studies, and I was just really interested in that protocol.
The training protocol for our student observers it was initially done in person, and we videoed that and have packaged it into an online training program. More than half of our student observers have actually used the online training protocol. They do post-tests and observation of the mock video as well. So it's actually worked pretty robustly to have the online version available.
That's such great intercoder reliability. I thought that was very, you know, you don't see that as often with student observers. Not because
right.
of student observers, but with any, when you're doing that kind of observational work.
Right. We did. The comment was that we had very strong inter-rater reliability. We actually are testing that in the field now as well with paired student observations. And the kappa levels for the limited number of those paired observations we have also come out quite strong. So it is a somewhat artificial inter-rater reliability to look just at the video because it's not in the field. So we're complementing that with the paired observations of the same student observing the inspection and then comparing the results on their observational forms.
I think that would be a great model for other researchers in other fields. I'm in nutrition education, and so we do a lot of things where we're doing training, so I think that would be a really great protocol to publish.
There are a couple of examples in clinical settings of student observers being used for observational research, particularly in nursing. But most of the direct observation studies in medical settings have been with trained nurse observers, and the fact that we can get inter-rater reliability this high with students is much less expensive than having to use health professionals in that role, and it creates an army of potential observers looking at a variety of different issues in the public health setting. You know, the biggest question was this adaptable to public health settings? While it may not be adaptable to all, at least to these food service inspections, it really has worked very well. Yes? Sorry, can you speak up a bit?
And
The question is a very good question, and that is, how often do the sanitarians correct but not cite? And that's the difference between the verbal corrections and the citations. So we did ask them to observe if there was a citation that was corrected at the time, a violation that was corrected at the time verbally, but not cited because it was corrected at the time. So we did look specifically at that issue. It's a SETI question, but the sanitarians helped establish our observational protocol and pointed out that that was an important factor. So we do have that embedded in there. And among the things that will be interesting to look at is whether different restaurants in lower income census tracts, for example, are more likely to have a citation rather than verbal correction. So some of the social demographics will be an interesting future thing to look at, but also looking at how the relationship issues relate to outcomes within the inspection, we're eager to examine as well.
Are there other questions for our speakers today? Well, if not, the speakers will be. I know sometimes people like to ask questions personally, so we will have a little bit of time for them to stick around. And if you have any questions, please feel free to come up. And with that, I'd like to thank our speakers today. We had great presentations, and give you a round of applause.